think you can tell us what to do?
From the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
No Fred Fowler today. He's off Canadian.
We're back.
Canadying it up. Whatever you want to call it. If you've been texting the show... You don't have access to the text, do you?
No, dude, they don't even give me the code to the back door.
Yeah, and I don't read the text. So that means if you've been texting the show,
we apologize.
None of those texts have been read.
But if you hit us on Twitter, I can respond. AJ's over there. He's writing his sports map article right now.
I'm not.
I don't know what you do. I just heard you typing, so I just figured
you're... I'm interactive. I'm interactive. My sports map articles are due on Friday. That's the day I have to write.
Mine's due on Tuesday.
What's yours about? Whatever you want it to be?
Yeah, pretty much for my column. Except when it's NFL season, I got to do Texans and then one on the NFL. But right now, I'm just doing my Tuesday column on whatever I want.
Okay.
This Tuesday was on the turning tide of the Astros because I really feel like this team is, not just after they won the World Series, but really it started in 2015. And really when Jeff Luhnow came to town, just the overall way that he's building this team, it's much more in the mold of kind of how the Yankees built their first dynasty with homegrown talent, sprinkling a couple of free agents here and there, and try to build a title contender for years to come, as opposed to buying a title like the Yankees did later on, or doing like the Royals did. You know, you build a contender through the draft, and then you let everybody go and continue to rebuild every so often. So I think this team is built for to contend for a while to come.
Well, that's what I always say. Like when people are like, "Oh, we can't trade Tucker, we can't trade Martez, whoever it is."
BS. Get rid of them.
I say, man, that's what the Yankees did all through the 90s and 2000s. They built their core.
Yeah.
And then every other prospect that they got, once they were good, every other prospect, they would hype him up, build him up, and then they would trade him for veteran guys who could help them win now.
Exactly. And that's the smart way to do it. When you have a glutton of prospects at the minor league level, and baseball prospects they're like little golden tickets. Especially when you have a guy who's like 20, 21, 22 years old, and he's hitting like 350 at AA with like 20 home runs, and he's a decent fielder or whatever, and people are like, oh, he's going to be the next Joe DiMaggio. He's going to be the next this, next that. He's 6'3", 215. He's a great kid, and blah, 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 blah. If he's going to bring you a Giancarlo Stanton or somebody like that,
bye. Well, that's what I always said last year when you know, there was talk about trading for an ace, and if they ended up not having to give up something major to get Justin Verlander, but I always said, dude, if you've got a chance to get Justin Verlander or Chris Sale, who it was at the time, and you're not willing to trade Alex Bregman for Chris Sale or Kyle Tucker, whoever it is, for Chris Sale, I just think that's so crazy because those guys might be good one day. They might be. They might not be, but they might be.
But I know for a fact Chris Sale is good right now.
I've seen Chris Sale do it for a number of years.
He's got skins on the wall.
He's the kind of player who there's, you know, he's in the short list of best pitchers in the sport.
Right.
You know, the top 5 or 10.
Right.
If you can get one of those guys for a prospect,
you do it.
I do it every time. I got a lot of grief for that, especially about Alex Bregman.
I remember that. And my thing was, I was having an argument with a guy in the barbershop, and he was like, no, you can't trade Bregman. You can't trade Bregman. I'm like, no, you trade Bregman. Well, who's going to play third? Marwin Gonzalez.
Yeah. He'll be all right.
And he was like,
Yuli Gurriel, who you...
Yeah. And you put Marwin at first.
Whatever.
I mean, Yuli was a third baseman.
Yeah.
He's become one of your best, most consistent hitters. You got to keep him in the lineup, move him to his more natural position, put Marwin at first, who's a better defensive first baseman than Yuli is, let's just admit it, and you move on. You got another ace in your pitching staff. Who gives a damn if you get rid of Alex Bregman?
But at the end of the day, it worked out, and they were able to keep Bregman. They still got an ace in Justin Verlander, and they won a World Series. But the talks came up again about JT Realmuto getting like a legit catcher in here, and because that's really the weakness of the Astros now is they both their catchers are extreme defensive liabilities.
When you rank in the bottom, like I want to say they were 28th or so in throwing guys out, stealing, something's wrong. I mean, I didn't see very many pass balls or whatever. I'm not sure where they ranked in that, but I know they were near the bottom of the league as far as guys getting caught stealing. That's not good. When you can put up the type of runs that these guys can put up and you have the type of pitching staff that you have, the last thing you need is to put guys in scoring position by being poor defensively at the catcher position. Because what happens if Verlander walks a guy? He's still second. A guy happens to get a single off of one of those fastballs, boom, a run scores.
Yeah.
And now you got an inning started. And then you get another guy on base, and he's still second. Then he's still that's how things get started. You know, and that's the last thing that this team needs is you need to keep guys from stealing second, stealing third, you know, cut down on those pass balls.
But nobody wanted to give up a prospect to get a real catcher in here.
So what? I mean, if I had to there's another controversial thing that I have, a trade that I believe the Astros should make before the trade deadline this season. And that's a future Sports Map article, so I'm not going to give it out on air. But just be looking out for it because y'all are going to give me flack about it. I know for sure. But when you have the opportunity to give up an asset and get a bigger asset back, as long as you have a similar or, you know, almost similar asset to replace the one you're giving up, you do it. I mean, it's no bones about it. And I know it's going to seem like cliche or just riding a piggyback, but Bill Belichick has done that for years. I mean, from Willie McGinnis, Roland Seymour, what was the Damian Woody? I mean, just guys that he either cut or traded before they lost value. You know, now the one thing, the head scratcher was Jimmy Garoppolo for a second when you could have had one of Cleveland's first. That was pretty dumb. But that's neither here nor there. He got something of value for it. But you give up guys before they lose value. You don't want to give up a guy after he's already lost value.
Once you've seen what they are.
Exactly.
Like, that's what I always think about prospects. Like, the bad thing about bringing up prospects is other teams are about to find out if they can play or not. And, like, don't you wish that the Astros would have traded Jonathan Singleton when he was a top prospect?
Before they gave him their five-year $10 million deal? Yeah.
Like, wouldn't it have been great if somebody said, hey, well, we'll give you and the Astros at the time, they obviously shouldn't have traded him because the Astros at that time were a team that should have been hoarding prospects.
Yes.
Because adding a top-tier pitcher to the Astros team 3 years ago, that's
it wouldn't have done anything.
That's what they call blue on black. It doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
So it would have been wasted assets. But now that you have a winner at the major league level, the job of the AAA team is no longer to develop players to play for your team. They suddenly become assets to bolster your major league ready team.
Oh, yeah.
In my mind, anyway.
And if you should happen to trade one of those major league ready players, or one of those guys goes down, you want that guy to come in and fill in for a short period of time just to give some of those other teams a little taste of what he can do. You know, it's kind of like if you go swimming, you just kind of dip your toe in the water and pull it right back out. That's all you want. You don't want those guys to become, you know, they get a book on those guys, like they say, and now it's like, oh, Kyle Tucker can't hit a curveball.
Right.
Or Forrest Whitley tells pitches. You know, J.P. Buskoskis or...
Or, God forbid, those guys get hurt.
Exactly. Now they're damaged goods. Now it's like, nah, I'm not giving you all of this for this guy because he just had Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
Or no, he broke his wrist and he won't be able to throw properly. Or whatever it is. I mean, you want to have these guys perform and show out at the minor league level to build up that value, like you said, and now you have an asset. And that's how I've always seen minor league players. They're assets. And until you can flip that asset into a better asset, you keep them around. If you have a spot for them, bring them up. But if not, keep them down there, have them showing off, and trade them. It just makes more sense.
That's the way I look at it. But people love – it's like backup quarterbacks. People love the thought of what they can't see. They're like, oh, exactly. That guy's going to be great.
That's why
you never know, but people like to think that guy is going to be the answer.
Ron Wolf, the old GM of the Packers, always had a philosophy. Every year he would draft a quarterback. Over the course of time of having Brett Favre and now Aaron Rodgers, they've groomed and traded Mark Brunell, mm-hmm. Aaron Brooks. Who was the quarterback that came to the Rams after Kurt Warner got hurt? Mark Bolger.
I was going to say Trent Green. But
and there's one other one that they end up trading for future draft picks because guys were like, hey, he's a backup at Green Bay. This guy must be good. He can't get a crack behind Favre or Rodgers, so he must be something. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if somebody missed out on the quarterback, didn't get to sign one, and they gave him something for Brett Hundley. I would be really surprised considering how he played last year.
But you know what the difference is? Now people have seen Brett Hundley.
Exactly.
They know it's nonsense. A year ago, Brett Hundley's stock, people thought Brett Hundley was like a legit, solid backup quarterback.
I thought he was
maybe
too.
Maybe just not able to get his shot. Now people know what he is. And now that you can get nothing for that guy now.
You can get a 6.
I don't know about that. That guy was bad. He's not like a bad, he's a bad backup quarterback. He's not like a bad starter project.
Right.
He's a bad backup quarterback. Like, I don't want him on my team. It's like Tom Savage. There's people who are like, well, Tom Savage is still a good backup quarterback. I was like, no. He played 10 games last year. He went 1-9.
Yeah.
That's the opposite of a good backup quarterback. That's not what I want.
His footwork was horrible.
I want a backup quarterback should be able to come in and win half the games that the starter would have won. And I don't know. Let's say that I think Deshaun Watson probably would have gone 6-4, 7-3 if he played the rest of the season out.
Yeah.
I think this was a 9-7 or a 10-6 team.
Yeah.
You won one game and the games weren't even close. I mean, he's a bad backup quarterback.
You got guys like that, but the only thing Brett Hundley has going for him, he's still young, and there's going to be some coach somewhere that's still going to be willing to give him a shot after the Packers cut ties with him eventually and say, you know what, I can use this guy. I can do something with this guy. It's always going to be somebody out there. All it takes is one fool.
Yep.
P.T. Barnum says, there's a fool sucker born every minute.
Yep.
Just find one.
All right, guys, got to tell you about my computer career. And tell you about Cody. In last August, he was slinging boom boxes at a big electronics box store. And last month, he started his IT career, making more money, working less hours. If you hate what you do, don't get boxed in. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. If you don't have computer experience or training, no problem. Transitioning people into an IT career is what they do. You attend classes on campus or live online just 2 or 3 times a week. You're going to get everything you need to start your new career. It's more than just a school. My Computer Career helps you get into the industry because they work with hundreds of employers that hire their students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start up soon, guys. Go take that free career evaluation now. MyComputerCareer.edu. It's not rocket science, guys. It's My Computer Career. MyComputerCareer.edu.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got
from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and AJ Hoffman.
All right, 5:19 on The Blitz. Jermaine Every. checking modulation test. Sorry. I blame the microphone for that. That wasn't my voice that was struggling. It was the microphone. I fixed it, though.
It's because you're a technological savant.
I'm could be an engineer. I just choose not to. But when in a pinch, I can take care of some things. We've been teasing White Wakanda. And what I've gathered is White Wakanda is basically what Jermaine believes white people live like. Is that fairly accurate?
Pretty much, yeah.
And I was really thinking about it when we were kind of having this discussion during one of the breaks. As a man living in a, or a child even, living in a black home,
mm-hmm.
And let's face it, we grew up in a white world.
Yeah.
You had to have developed certain stereotypes or assumptions that you made about all white people.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And I'm curious what some of those are. I've been waiting for this. I'd like to know. We teased it a little bit. We gave some things.
Yeah, like in White Wakanda, parents ask before they come into their kids' rooms.
Okay.
That doesn't happen. That's for sure in White Wakanda.
That doesn't happen to black kids?
Man, I almost slapped my son across the head the other day because he went in his room and closed his door, and I was trying to ask him something, and he couldn't hear me.
Well, if you slam the door on your parents' face, even in White Wakanda, that doesn't
fly. No, he didn't slam the door. He, like, went in his room. He wanted to play his game, and so he's online with his friends, so he'll close his door. Well, I'm calling him. He didn't hear me, and I saw his door was closed again. So I slapped him upside the head and said, stop closing your door. He's like, well, I can't hear my TV.
Oh, in your black house, you guys didn't have intercom systems?
No, what? Intercom systems? Yeah, right. I barely got the G.I. Joe walkie-talkie thing. I had to ask for that for my birthday.
That's a good birthday present.
Now, I'm not going to lie. Like, one thing, a White Wakanda thing that kind of happened in my household, because my birthday is in December.
Okay.
Really close to Christmas. My mom always felt that I should have a birthday and a Christmas because she saw her aunt, and her name is literally Noel because she was born on Christmas.
Oh, that sucks.
And she never got a birthday and a Christmas. She just got birthday Christmas presents.
My mom is a Christmas Eve birthday.
Mm-hmm.
My wife is a 1 week to the day before Christmas. So that's usually how it works.
Yeah. Now, that's one thing I can say, like, in White Wakanda, if your birthday is the day after Christmas, you will have Christmas presents and then you will have birthday presents the next day. I really feel like that's a thing.
I you're probably right. Like, I always make sure to get, even my mom, I mm-hmm. get her a birthday present and a Christmas present.
Oh, yeah. They're
a day apart.
Yeah, of course. Like,
but I feel like I would do that if I were black. Mm. But I also don't know what it's like to actually be black, so I don't know.
My grandmother would spoil us on my dad's side. She would spoil us a lot of the times when we were growing up as kids. But I'll never forget, I think it's when she got me my Super Nintendo or something like that. She was like, now look, this is your birthday and your Christmas present. Especially after I got older. Oh, uh-huh. It was, nah, bruh, this is your birthday and Christmas present. Merry Christmas, happy birthday. That's how it was.
Okay.
But I feel as though.
Did you get a Super Nintendo the year it came out?
Yeah.
See, that's pretty White Wakanda, too.
Hell yeah. It's because my grandmother was a nurse and my grandfather worked two full-time jobs. So they did okay for themselves. They did okay for themselves. But
I remember when I got the year the first Shaq shoes came out, the black and blue Reebok pumps.
Oh, yeah.
I got those. And they were like $150.
The closest I ever got to those was the case that they were in at the shoe store my mom worked in. As bad as I wanted them. That was as close as I got to it. I got to hold the actual size 22, the model of it, when it came to the shoe store she worked at. I got to hold it, but I didn't ever get to put it on my feet.
Damn.
And we're the same age.
They sent me the, when I worked in Austin, they sent me Yao Ming's shoes. Like, mm-hmm. I think it was Reebok too. And they were just absurd. And I would put my foot inside it wearing my shoe.
Damn.
And I would walk around with it and people would be like, oh my God. Like, they would really believe that my feet were that big, and it was, like, obnoxiously big. Like, I had to walk, like, kind of like a duck walk. Yeah.
Like a clown?
But people still bought into it.
The Ronald McDonald shoes?
Yeah.
Yeah. In White Wakanda, the steak probably tastes the same before it's cooked as it does after it's cooked.
What do you mean?
Dude, let's just face it. Dude... You're different. We're acknowledging this, and I'm trying to get you invited to the cookout. But I've gone to some of my white friends' houses and I've eaten the food and I'm like, it all tastes the same. Like nothing has any flavor. Nothing sticks out. Lately, I've seen where people are really getting into this foodie thing in the last like 5 to 10 years. So people are becoming exposed to things. Like there is a such thing as salt, pepper, like flavors, you know, combinations, fusion, things like that. It's starting to come around, but it's kind of cool because now that whole myth about white people and seasoning their food is kind of, it's slowly going out the window. But I can tell by some Instagram pictures that I see, I'm like, that looks bland as hell.
Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about it. In white Wakanda, we don't burn all our meats.
Hey, we don't burn our meats either.
Y'all cook well-done steaks.
No, we don't. It's just charred on the outside.
No.
And it's nice and soft and tender.
Jong, have you noticed this about black people too? Most black people order steaks well done.
There's a few that on Twitter that have said that they like their meats well done.
Listen, and it's not, I mean, just as with every stereotype, mm-hmm. there are outliers, but I think the majority.
You think the majority the lies majority closest of towards your people the well done?
Are on the well done side of things.
Think about it like this. Culturally, like, we cook our food a certain way. And so it's.
I mean, you cook your steaks different than white people do?
Yeah.
What's different?
We put seasoning on it. I mean, we put flavor on. No, but
salt and pepper is seasoning, and that's what.
No,
that's all you need on a steak.
Well, some steaks, yeah, but sometimes you want to get a little bit more jiggy with it. Like you don't want to just do salt and pepper. Like you want to put a little bit of like a Cajun style, like Tony Sacheres or something like that on it. Matter of fact, I have we met a lady through another friend of ours. She's a chef and she has her own spice blend.
Okay.
Really good. Really good stuff. And it doesn't have all that like crap in it, like Tony Sacheres or whatever that seasoning salt is.
Yeah.
Good stuff. It's called Pootie Spice.
That's a bad name.
It's cool the way she came up with it. It was like a mispronunciation of something. She was cooking something and that's how it came about. So she stuck with the name Pootie Spice.
Okay.
But it's good stuff. But I understand what you mean because I'm not going to lie. Growing up, when we would go eat a steak or something, my mom would always order the steak well done. And I'm like, that's how I thought it was supposed to be. And the first time I had steak like medium or medium well or whatever, like less than well done, I was like, oh, so this is how you do it. Okay, this is pretty cool. It was a revelation. It was eye-opening. It's just like the first time I ever saw one of my friends tell his mom to get out of his room. I like when he said that, I went into like, you know, my house mode and I ducked. And he was like, dude, what are you doing? I was like, I thought your mom was about to throw a shoe or something. He's like, for what? Like, you told her to get out of your room. Are you stupid? Oh no, she's always in here. You know, she knows I don't like her in my room like that. And I have my friends over and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, damn, you can get away with talking to your mom like that? Now, mind you, I never went home and tried this because as you can see, I still have all my teeth.
Yeah.
I didn't want to lose any of my teeth, eyesight, you know, a limb, anything like that. So I never tried anything like that. I believe in white Wakanda that happens often.
Yeah. Like my parents, I had a lock on my door when I was in high school.
What?
Yeah.
You had a lock on your door when you were in high school?
Yeah.
Damn.
My our house also had like the, we had the double master bedroom set up.
Uh-huh.
So like my parents had the upstairs master bedroom and I had a downstairs master bedroom.
What?
Yeah. So my bedroom was really big. And I had bunk beds. I had a queen size bed. I had a couch. And my friends would just come over and spend
the night. So basically, you had an apartment for a room.
I did, kind of. Yeah,
you had an efficiency for a room.
My bedroom was probably about twice the size of this studio that we're in right now.
Nah.
Yeah,
my bedroom was like I could almost spread my arms and touch the wall. Now, mind you, we didn't have like a whole lot. Even when my parents were together, we had a normal small size house. And my room was a little bit bigger then. And there was another house we lived in Atlanta. We had a pretty decent sized house, but still, my room wasn't that big.
See, our house had three bedrooms. There was no fourth bedroom. It had three bedrooms, but they were all really big bedrooms. And my dad and my stepmom had babies.
Mm-hmm.
So those two, the two babies were in the, it was a boy and a girl.
Yeah.
But they shared a room because I was a high school kid. I mean, it wasn't going to share a room with my little brother who's a baby. That wouldn't have made sense. But it also meant that when I was in high school, my parents didn't care what I did because they had babies to worry about.
See?
So I was allowed to, I basically had free reign of when I came home, when I left.
Oh my God.
My dad didn't mind if I had girls in the room. My stepmom, she did not like it, so she would fight that. But yeah, it was I had a pretty independent high school life.
Girls never went past the living room.
Really?
At our house. The first time...
How'd you get laid?
Now, my uncle, he had a room upstairs in my grandmother's house, and he could do whatever he wanted because he was 10 years older than me. The first time I ever brought a girl upstairs, I think I was in high school or college.
Yeah.
And this was at my grandmother's house when my mom moved away, and I stayed with my grandparents because she moved out of town. Like, I was in, like, in high, matter of fact, senior year of high school, because I remember my mom moved at the beginning of my senior year. She moved here, and I was still in high school, and I wanted to finish high school here. And so that was the first time I was ever able to bring a girl past the living room and go upstairs.
You got her pregnant?
No. Come on, dude. I only have two kids.
That's it. How old are they?
12 and about to be 15.
15?
Yeah. Actually, they're like 30 going on 40, both of them. Yeah. My daughter,
Is she the older one?
No, she's the younger one. She's the one I'm banking on.
Yeah.
At like 9 or 10, she said, you know, Dad.
By 15, you can tell your son he ain't going to make it.
He's going to make it.
But he ain't going to make it to the level where he can take care of you.
He probably could if he ever motivated himself to keep doing what he's really, really good at, which is art. Like, I'll show you a picture on the break. But my daughter was like 9 or 10, and she developed this plan. She was like, I think in my junior year of high school, I'm going to go and stay with Cindy, which is my mom. So that way, when I go to LSU, they won't charge me out-of-state fees, and I can be an in-state student.
That's nice.
I got that kid. And then I got the kid who can draw this amazing, beautiful picture and paint it and everything, but he doesn't want to do art.
Yeah, sometimes it happens that way. Ricky Williams was really great at football. He didn't want to do it.
Yeah, he's going to be a late bloomer, though. I got confidence in that kid. It's just he's going to bloom a little bit later, but he's going to do something great.
All right, guys. Got to tell you about Republic Harley Davidson. I take my bike to Republic Harley Davidson because there are probably four dealerships closer to my house, but I take it there because I know they're going to take care of my bike. They've got seven master technicians on staff, seven, way more than any other dealership in the Houston. And I don't want some hourly guy putting together my bike, taking it apart and putting it together. I don't want that. That doesn't make sense. They've got a great inventory. If you haven't seen the inventory, I can't tell you how great it is. You got to go see it for yourself. They got 100 brand new bikes on their showroom floor, every model, every color. A ton of pre-owned Harleys outside. And right now, when you buy a new Harley at Republic, you'll get maintenance for life. How great is that? I've been to the other places in town. They don't live up to Republic. And they've got bike night coming up. The first bike night of the year, Thursday, March 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. Republic Harley-Davidson will host bike night every third Thursday of the month through October. They're going to have live music on an outdoor stage. They'll have food. They'll have prizes. And they're giving away a Harley motorcycle. But you can only register to win at bike night. So the more events you come to, the more you get to register. In October, one lucky winner is going to be walking away with a brand new Harley. Whatever your Harley needs, service, new or pre-owned bikes, merchandise, riding classes, Republic Harley-Davidson's got you covered. They are the best in Houston. They've got financing for everyone, so whatever your budget, they can get you on a bike. 12707 Southwest Freeway in Stafford, just outside the Beltway, online at republichd.com. That's Republic Harley-Davidson.
Texas A&M's run in the SEC tournament begins Wednesday on ESPN 97.5.
Yeah. So tomorrow, did it say it begins Wednesday?
Yeah, sorry, that's tomorrow.
That's wrong.
Yeah, it's Thursday, sorry.
That person lied. Texas A&M's run in the SEC tournament begins tomorrow. And because it begins tomorrow... our little program will be on at 3:30.
I got an updated time on the tournament. So they're actually tipping 30 minutes earlier. So Joel and Barry are going to come in for a little bit. So we're
come on at 4.
Yeah, we're coming on at 4.
Okay. Aggie playing Alabama. Alabama.
You think they win?
Tomorrow. I think they'll win.
Okay, so that means on Friday, Joel and Barry will probably be going an hour 30 again.
Okay.
Because I think they'll be playing at the same time.
Probably so.
Yeah, they'll tip around noon.
So, yeah, that's a... Alabama's pretty good. They've got a really good player in Colin Sexton, but God, A&M, they've got so much talent. They've got to be better than what they've been. They're a team, man. I thought they could challenge for the SEC this year, and they
started off looking like they were going to be really, really, really good.
Well, here's what's crazy: their first game of the year, they played West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and I bet against them because if you remember at the beginning of the year, all these NBA guys that A&M has, they were all suspended.
Yep.
So they're playing West Virginia, who's pretty good, who ends up being, you know, what are they, the 3 seed in the Big 12, and
yeah.
Arguably the best conference in the land. They're the 3 seed. They play A&M, shorthanded A&M, and A&M beat the hell out of those guys.
Yep.
I was like, man, this team is going to be good. And then as soon as SEC play started, they were like, nah, we're going to be mediocre. We've decided. And they stuck to that. That's one thing they do when they start.
What's funny is like I got some friends that are Aggies, and they have this real inflated sense of self-worth. And they're almost like the short guy who has little man complex. Like, no, we're better than that. We're bigger than this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And then eventually when the bottom falls out, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't know what happened. Why did this happen to us? Well, because you thought you were 10 feet tall and you're actually 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
And that happens to Aggies all the time. It normally happens to their football program, but it just so happened this year it happened to their basketball program.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's no specific rhyme or reason why they just stopped playing well, and they ran into better competition, teams that had better chemistry, better rotations, more consistent play, especially from their bigs, and they started losing. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Accept who you are. Be comfortable with the skin that you're in.
It's the way it should be.
Exactly.
But you still burn your meat.
Nah, man, I don't burn my meat.
How do you eat your steak?
I like it medium.
You wanted to say medium well, but you're holding back.
No, I like a little red. I like when I cut the steak and there's a little like that juice, the blood kind of stuff. I like that because I like it to be juicy.
Okay.
Like a juicy steak.
I do too.
I like it to kind of melt my mouth. I don't want to be chewing on it for 6 years and having it digest for another three. I don't like that. I'm not down with that.
Well, that's barely cook my steak. Like, it's rare. I'm a rare man.
Now, see, that's a little too much for me.
And if I'm at a good steakhouse, I'll mm-hmm. order it blue, where, like, it's basically just kind of, they put it on the fire, flip it over, and then put it on your plate.
Nah, I can't.
And it's cold in the middle.
Nah, see, it needs to still be warm in the middle, but I
don't
want
need
some
that.
Pink.
I don't care about the temperature. I want that. I like the taste of cow blood.
See, that's just cook it some.
Will you eat every part of a pig?
Just about.
What parts won't you eat?
I don't eat tails.
Okay.
I don't eat pigtails.
I don't think I've ever had a pigtail.
And you know what's funny? Pig.
But
lips,
I will eat literally every part of a pig.
Pig lips
care.
Are actually the ears.
Oh, really?
You didn't know that?
No.
See?
Sometimes I'll go to Hay Merchant, one of my favorite bars in the city.
Uh-huh.
They serve a pig's head. And I will eat every part of that pig's head. I'll eat the eyeball. I'll eat the snout.
Ears. I haven't had all of that.
Oh. And you probably didn't think this happened in White Wakanda. I'll eat the feet.
What?
I'll eat the chitlins.
You come into the cookout.
I eat all of
that. I
don't
eat chitlins.
You don't see, so you don't, you're a waster. in White Wakanda, we don't waste those guts.
Did you know that barbacoa actually comes from the pig's head?
Oh, yeah. They stick a pig or a cow's head, barbacoa.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, they stick the cow's head in the ground. Dude. It cooks in the ground, like legit barbacoa. Yeah.
Dude, that is some good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That is some good eating
right there. On my barbecue tour, there's still one place in Texas. They're like grandfathered in. Because now, legally, it's hard to cook barbacoa because of health code stuff. Like,
really?
Yeah, you're not, like, cooking in the ground is not it's not a clean
sanitary
way to cook. Yeah. But there's a place in South Texas, I want to say it's all the way in Brownsville, but that they still cook in the ground. Like, they've got an in-ground pit that they wrap up the heads and throw those heads in.
What?
And, yeah, and I went down there, and that's what I had when I went through that place. It was one of the top 50.
Yeah.
So I had to go down there and eat it, and man, it's good. Real good.
That's some good stuff.
Oh yeah.
God. You know what I hate when I go to a Mexican place or quote-unquote Mexican place or get a barbacoa taco, and I'm like, this is shredded beef.
Yeah, that's not real barbacoa.
That, exactly.
Like the barbacoa if you say at Chipotle you want barbacoa, that's
it's just shredded beef.
It's just beef.
It's shredded beef. You took a roast and you cooked it and you called it barbacoa.
Legit barbacoa is a head. That's the real deal. All right, we'll be back. It's a Blitz on ESPN 975.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
I don't care if that happens to me. Worth it.
You keep eating your blue steaks and I'll keep eating my medium steaks.
Keep doing it.
And we'll just find out who dies first.
You'll never know what real meat tastes like.
I tell you what. Here's what we're going to do. I don't know where the heck we would meet up at or go and do this at because we both live on opposite ends of the earth.
Yeah, you live a long way away.
Yeah, right now we're like
around the station.
Like right now we're like in the Stafford area in Europe and almost north of the wall.
So this is like kind of the
middle. We would have to find somewhere around here.
Okay.
And we're going to order steak. I'm going to eat a steak the way you like it. And you eat a steak the way I like it.
Okay.
You're probably still going to like mine.
I can do medium rare or medium. Medium's like anything over medium, I just feel like it's a waste.
And see, here's the thing. I've noticed that different places, when I say medium, sometimes I get something that's more rare. Sometimes I get something that's more medium well.
Yeah.
It's not always consistent.
If I got medium well, I'd be so pissed.
I got one. I ordered medium one time at a place, and it was like, I was like, this isn't medium. Then I ordered medium again at another place, and I was like, all right, this is more medium. Than medium. Well, I like this. I like this, what I'm doing. And I'll make sure I just say, when I say, okay, I want it medium, but what I'm looking for is this. I want my steak to look like this. I want it to, you know, and I describe it how I want it. And I let the server know that. So that way, whatever their definition of medium, rare, medium well, they know how I want my steak to come out. So, and I don't care if I don't get cool points or if I get side-eyed at a steakhouse or whatever it is. I want to make sure my steak comes out the way I want
you,
my steak to come out.
You use, like, steak sauce or anything like that?
If it's done right, you shouldn't have to.
Okay. That's what I'm making sure.
If it's done right, you shouldn't have to.
Yeah, I don't believe in that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
All that needs to be on a steak is salt and pepper. That's it.
What about, like, that butter, though?
Butter's good.
I love, like...
But it doesn't have to be there.
No, it doesn't. But if it's there, I'm not upset. And I like steaks with like how they put different toppings and stuff on steaks sometimes.
You like crab?
There was, I'm not going to lie, and I don't care if I get food shame for this. I think it was Applebee's. They had like this shrimp, garlic, Parmesan sauce thing that they would put on this steak.
I live in White Wakanda. I never go to Applebee's.
See?
Never. Like I am... Like, if you said, okay, what's the chain restaurant you're least likely to go, like, sit-down chain restaurant you're least likely to go have a meal
and,
at?
And I knew that.
It's Applebee's.
That's why I said it.
Yeah.
And that's why I knew this would spark a whole nother conversation was because I was pissed when they took that off the menu. I didn't go to Applebee's for, like, 3 or 4 years after that.
Yeah, I haven't been to Applebee's in, like, probably 25 years.
See? And I think we just went to an Applebee's sometime within the last six
you
months.
You chose to go to Applebee's?
Yeah.
Like, dude, was it, were all the other restaurants closed? Was it New Year's Day or something? Like,
I don't know. I think it was like after church and we were trying to get something to eat. And I was like, we're not eating IHOP because the kids, let's go to IHOP. We can get a giant stack of pancakes and I can feed my grown man sized son, you know, for relatively cheap. And I was like, no, I want some lunch. I want this or that, whatever. And it's like, oh, well, let's just go to Applebee's. It's right here. It's close. You know, no big deal. But we're not going back because that Applebee's is kind of dirty.
My family knows they would never suggest that. they would walk home. Home.
I'm not going to lie. There's a burger there that if it was made anywhere else, I think you would try it. It's a quesadilla burger.
I don't need that.
Dude.
I just like burgers with just regular cheese. I don't need a tortilla on my burger.
It's so good, though.
I don't need that.
Sweet potato fries?
I like sweet potato fries.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
That's about the only thing I think you would eat there.
Yeah, I don't like Applebee's. I'm against that. It's like I feel like food vendors sell all their food to like all the good restaurants, and then the stuff that like Outback turns its nose up at
it ends up at Applebee's.
Like it ends up at three places: Applebee's, Chili's, and TGI Fridays. Those are the places like where,
you know what's funny,
all the rejected
though?
Food from real restaurants goes, yeah. It's funneled to those places.
Now, I'm not going to lie. There is one place that's like that my family knows when they pick it, they know I'm not happy about eating there. Red Lobster.
Oh, Red Lobster. I mean, it's the Applebee's of seafood.
Exactly. Exactly. Coming from where I come from and cooking the things that we would cook and the way we would cook it, I tell them all this stuff is frozen.
I will say this. I've come to a realization during this conversation. I made a mistake. There is one sit-down chain restaurant I would eat at Applebee's before. Golden Corral.
Okay.
I won't eat it there. I won't do it. There's no circumstance that would allow it.
We used to go to Golden Corral all the time when we were at work. We would get let out of the early meeting on Saturday, and we would go there and eat the breakfast buffet, and then all be too fat and full to work for the rest of the day.
I don't know why.
I haven't gone there in like 10 years or so.
I'll go to a Chinese buffet and have no problem with it. If it's not Chinese, I feel like a buffet is inappropriate. I don't know why.
Probably
a
because...
A pizza buffet I can do under protest. Uh-huh. Not like Cece's. I won't do that. That's garbage. But like Double Dave's has a decent pizza buffet. Uh-huh. Like I'll eat that.
Okay.
But I don't like... I don't understand. It's like every kind of food under the rainbow.
Yeah,
just sitting out.
Wait until
it doesn't make sense.
You're a big guy. Wait until your sons get more your size and they start eating more. You're gonna start liking those cheaper places.
Dude, I got a 10-year-old kid now who sometimes orders two entrees at dinner.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, like you can't. The days of like going out to eat for a family of four for $50.
That's gone, right.
In my house. That's long gone.
My wife and I couldn't even go on a date a couple weeks ago and eat under $50.
Yeah. No. And like if God forbid, I mean, the once in a blue moon I have a chance to go out with just me and my wife.
Yeah.
I'm not going somewhere where I can get a meal for $50. I'm like, I'm trying to like splurge. It's like an event. You know?
You want to kind
those
of do
night,
that.
Those are the nights I'm trying to eat a $50 steak.
Okay, now see, sometimes it just depends on the way my wife is feeling. She's like, I don't want to go here. I don't want to go there. I'm like, okay, well, let's just go at this place or whatever it is.
We end up going to Perry's a lot because there's one right by my house. My wife is the same way. She doesn't like to be inconvenienced. I'll drive anywhere in the city to get a good meal.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
She's like, I don't want to. It's too far. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of how my wife is.
Our favorite place is this spot, Killen's STQ, over here.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, it's so good. It's the best, I think.
I pass it all the time at work, and I still haven't gone over there.
It's so good. It used to be really hard to get a reservation. Now I think you could get a reservation, like, you know, that week. Used to, it was like months out. I had to get reservation. I remember I had to take a day off, Jong, so I could get to my reservation.
Damn.
Or at least leave early. I don't know what it was.
That's crazy.
But she's since then, she's just like, eh, let's just go. I want to go somewhere close. And the closest place like that, like that's decent, is Perry. So we drive there a lot.
That's the default.
Which is nice because it means I can have some whiskey with my dinner. And
I like hole-in-the-wall places, to be honest with you. I like the little small mom-and-pop stuff.
Yeah.
That's more my speed. I don't like big places.
You don't like the fancy?
No, not really. I can do fancy, but
well,
if I had my choice,
a small spot.
I mean, like, you know, mom and pop. Like Tornado Burger, that burger that I bought you all the time.
That was a good burger.
That's the kind of stuff I like.
You ever been to Giacomo's in New Orleans?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite restaurants. I love that place. It's just like a
really good
emptied out old house.
Yeah.
But man, I love that spot. We get every time I go to New Orleans, that's one of the meals
there. Have you tried Port au Call?
No.
You gotta try Port au Call.
All right. All right, we'll be back. Hour number three. We're mapping it up. Look at that. I'm gonna take a call on the other side of this break.
What?
Yeah. We haven't done that all day. I know when Fred's here, he's the call taker, and I hate calls. I'm gonna take a call today. We'll do that on the other side of the break. It's Blitz on ESPN 975.